Welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast. My name is Alan Wilson and I'm the host of the podcast. And each week we try to give you the opportunity to reflect on some of the things that make up a leadership journey. Last week we were talking to David McClay. David is the rector of Willowfield Parish Church in East Belfast. And this week we're back with David. If you missed last week's interview, you can catch up with it by either on the website yourleadershipjourney.net or by going to the podcast site on iTunes. Well, David, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you again for your time that you've given us. You shared with us in the first part of this interview about some of those formative experiences. You shared about some of the people who'd helped to form you as a young man in coming to faith. You talked about the influence of the rector, Roland Hutchison, in your first curacy in Marilyn. And then you talked about the very profound experience of loss and that you went through with the illness of your wife and then losing your wife. And your choices that you made in the middle of all of that and seeking God and then that sense of God saying that there's a new day. We left you just coming home from Singapore. So take us back then. You're back from Singapore, this season of really seeking God, of sensing that you'd met with God in a very profound way. Where does the story go from that? I mean, there's obviously more in relation to family. There's the Willowfield episode. I think there's going to be more in terms of an involvement with new wine. Tell us how would we pick up some of these aspects of your story?
There's a whole spectrum, I suppose, of things that kind of would happen that would help to shape my future. I came back actually at a time when life as a church leader in Kilkeel was pretty challenging, actually. It wasn't all straightforward, it wasn't all easy. In church leadership, there's always people stuff, there's always personality stuff. And so there was some of that had going on, which I suppose really put me in a place of really needing to do a couple of things, really needing to ask the Lord to sovereignly give me the strength that I needed as a leader.
Yeah.
The thing about leading when you're going through grief or going through any sort of traumatic season is that you do depend on God, hopefully, but even in the midst of that you can make some decisions that maybe on hindsight you maybe might have. In terms of the process of change, and there was a lot of change going on in Kilkeel at that particular time in terms of where the church was going and the direction of the church, I might have taken a few months over some of the decisions rather than making them in a few days. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you're going through grief, you're maybe not as wise as you might be. And I was only in my early 30s as well.
Do you mean you took decisions quickly that you should have really spent?
Yeah, I should have spent a bit more time on some stuff. And therefore I created a few problems for myself probably along the way, as one does in leadership.
Yes.
So there was some of that going on. In the midst of all of that, around the same time then, I met Hilary, who I'm now married to.
Yeah.
So there was all of that in terms of newness, in terms of exploring a new relationship, in terms of falling in love with somebody, in terms of asking somebody who had her own life in England, would she want to join me in Ireland? So there was the adventure of that, the challenge of that, the uncertainty of all of that as well. And at the same time, I'm still a single dad with the responsibilities of looking after a six-year-old daughter and doing life every day and leading a church every day and staying sane in the midst of that, and trying to be faithful in the midst of that to the Lord. And I suppose in the midst of all of that, wanting to honour God in whatever choices or decisions I might make.
Yeah.
And wanting to make sure that those would be the right choices and the right decisions. Mm-hmm. And that's always challenging, because we all wrestle with the world, with the flesh and with the devil.
Yeah.
So there was all of that in the mix as I tried to move forward. I did fall in love with Hilary, and it was a fairly speedy sort of romance, and we were married after quite a short period of dating. But then that in itself brought another whole new world of transformation and change, because Hilary was not only becoming my wife, but she was moving from a life in England to a life in Kilkeel.
Yeah.
She was taking on the responsibility of being a mum to my daughter. So there was all of that world of change. And I love change, actually, and I'd probably thrive on change, but even I kind of... you know, there are moments where you want the safety of the familiar as well.
Yeah.
So those were exciting times, and in terms of what God was doing in the church, we moved into a season of, on the one hand, seeing God at work, particularly raising up young leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And raising up some people who would go into ministry.
This is still in Kilkeel.
People going off to train for Church Army to be Church Army evangelists. One or two going off to train for ordination. Local leaders being raised up in that local context. And I suppose out of all that I'd kind of been through, I sort of had landed... spiritually and emotionally in a place where I was really hungry to see God at work, both in my own life but also in the life of the church. So I probably became more of a risk taker. And I think, again, traumatic seasons in life can either make you very cautious or help you step into risk taking. And for me, I think it had the second impact, that I became somebody who was willing to take more risks.
And you mentioned in the first part of the interview the influence of your rector when you were in Donegal, who encouraged you to he gave you the freedom, you said he gave you the freedom to succeed and the freedom to fail as well. So I suppose there's you picked up some of that even in those early days.
Absolutely, and I hope that people around me, I really hope that this is true. I'm quite driven. It's part of my personality. I work hard. I think I love what I do. I love ministry. I love the Lord, desperately want to see his church thrive and be what I believe it can be anywhere, actually. I don't think the church needs to be in decline anywhere. And I believe that passionately. And so I hope that folks around me feel that they can take risks and get it wrong. What I don't cope well with is folks doing nothing, or sort of holding back and being overcautious.
Would you say that the ability and the willingness to take risks is a key aspect of leadership, or of a certain kind of leadership?
You know. Here's the thing, Al. I think I've learned most things by getting some things wrong.
Mm.
I've learned most things by taking some risks that worked
mm-hmm.
and some that didn't. I believe that God is able to do incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
I passionately believe that. As the years go by, I'm more and more and more convinced that the scriptures are such that we need to live under the authority of God's word.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more and more and more convinced that the Lord wants to bless his church and bless his people. And I think that the Lord particularly will bless a church or a group of people who orientate themselves towards the least and towards the lost.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so that nowadays, I think, sort of, those sort of things, I think nowadays are the sort of things that I hope shape me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get it wrong, they're the things that I keep coming back to.
Mm-hmm.
And I do get it wrong.
It's like your core values that you...
Absolutely.
Going back into your story, Hilary has come into your life. What about the move then from Kilkeel to Belfast? I mean, that's quite a move. And I'm thinking, you know, even as we're talking, I'm thinking, Donegal, granted, working in Donegal town, but having grown up on a farm in Donegal, Marilyn, which is also quite rural, Kilkeel, fishing village, but those are not exactly cities.
So increasingly over the years, I began to love evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the late 1990s, found myself regularly praying, Lord, whenever I move from Kilkeel, I'd love to go somewhere where there's a lot of lost people.
Mm-hmm.
I had no concept of ever moving to the city.
Right.
I'm not a city person.
Mm-hmm.
You're quite right, I'd never lived in the mm-hmm. city apart from
Dublin.
Living in Dublin for mm-hmm. 3 years, and I was as a student, yeah. which is a very different yeah. world, really. But through a series of events, God, I believe, spoke very clearly and called us to move to Belfast mm-hmm. and to Willowfield
mm-hmm.
in 2001.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about that. I mean, I think people who are listening who are in ministry situations, you know, maybe wonder, how do you know when it's time to move? Can you stay too long in a place? How do you know that your desire to move isn't just this, you know, a kind of unhealthy discontent with where you are? And how do you know when it's a positive sense that God's calling you away to something new?
There have been occasions where I've thought God was calling me to something different, yeah. and doors closed.
Yeah.
When we moved to Belfast, I think you only are really, really sure in retrospect if you look back.
Yeah.
But looking back, there were some defining moments. There was a growing sense of needing to be willing to go to Belfast.
Yeah.
I'd been approached about Willowfield. I'd been asked to consider Willowfield. And I had actually kind of consistently said, you don't really want me to go to Willowfield. I'm a country boy.
Mm-hmm.
You can do better than mm-hmm. getting me to go to Willowfield. I'm not the right fit. And I'd consistently said that. I'd said that to my bishop. I'd said that to some other people involved in the process as well. But there came a number of defining moments where I just knew I had to be willing to go.
Mm-hmm.
One of those was when I agreed to meet with, in the Church of Ireland system, the four parochial nominators mm-hmm. that are appointed to seek out a new rector. They came to Kilkeel to meet me, and they arrived early, so I could see that they were sitting in the car outside, so I went into the kitchen to put on the kettle to get ready to make them a pot of coffee whenever they'd arrive in, and I'm standing at the sink and informally saying to the Lord, Lord, this doesn't make much sense. You know that I'm meeting these people out of courtesy, really, but God, you know that I don't want to go to Belfast. And God, you know that I wouldn't fit into Belfast anyway. And I was trying to convince both God and myself, I think, in retrospect. And I sensed God actually say something to me. The words of a song of Robin Mark very clearly came into my mind and into my heart. As sure as gold is precious and the honey sweet. So I love this city and I love these streets. Every child out playing by its own front door, every baby lying on its bedroom floor, feel it in my spirit, feel it in my bones. You're going to send, revive and bring them all back home. And I start to weep as I fill this kettle. To the point that when the doorbell went, I was in bits. And kind of let these guys in and showed them into the sitting room. And then spent 10 minutes trying to pull myself together in order to sit down and go through what was in essence an interview, as it turned out, for the job. And there's other aspects to all of that as well that I won't go into, but we ended up anyway believing it was right. We ended up saying yes, and we landed in Willowfield on the 1st of May 2001.
How would you describe the difference between being in Kilkeel and moving to Willowfield?
It was total contrast. Like, it was so different. We arrived at the beginning of May. I remember that summer in the month of August, Hilary and I and Cherith went to the New Wine Summer Holiday Conference in England. And I'd been in Willowfield, I suppose, about 3 months at that stage, and I was still figuring out, where have we arrived? The need was incredible. The social need.
Describe for people for some of the people listening will be familiar with East Belfast, but for those who are not, just describe where the church is situated.
The church is situated at the bottom of the Woodstock Road, which is a fairly challenging working class community, where the UVF, Ulster Volunteer Force, would have been very active. Where there's more by way of social deprivation than there is in most places in Europe. Where in the early years we had regular vandalism, like around the rectory. Remember the first time we had friends in for a meal, we'd get the police out twice. during the course of the meal, this property, the adjacent church property being damaged, kids breaking windows, kids damaging my car, even urine through the letterbox on an occasion. So it wasn't a comfortable environment for a boy from Donegal. It really wasn't. And so it was really challenging, really, really challenging. And I remember again being on my face before the Lord and crying out to God and saying, God, where do we start? And rhyming off then to the Lord, you know, God, we could do a mission week, we could do Alpha, we could do guest services. And I sensed God say to me, David, just do something. and that actually was incredibly freeing, to be honest.
Yeah. What did you do?
We did all of those things.
Right.
And we just did all of those things. Yeah. So we started to do a lot of servant evangelism, giveaways on the local road. We started to do open air work on the local road. We started to do door to door work. We did a lot of Alpha courses. We brought in visiting evangelists. We did homemade mission weeks. We put evangelism at the very top of the agenda. And for 16 plus years, that's what we've tried to do.
And what's been the fruit of that?
Over the years, we've seen significant numbers of people, really, of every age group, come to Christ. And some of those are people from the local area who are now on our staff team and doing ministry in the local area. there's lots of issues around how you organise church to do mission locally that would take longer than we've got to sort of go through. But
You've said a number of things about church. The priority of evangelism. You talked about churches that are oriented towards the least and the lost. You've talked about your conviction that the church never needs to be failing to thrive. That's not too many negatives. Mm-hmm. How do you see the church in Ireland at the moment? Not just Willowfield, maybe not even just your diocese or even the Church of Ireland, but what sense do you have of the church across the island, but maybe particularly in the north?
I have a sense that we're living in days of incredible challenge, but incredible opportunities. Mm-hmm. The challenges are clearly around the sort of secular society that now characterises who we are as a society. The challenges are around, sometimes I think, an attitude that can be quite self-seeking, even in the church.
Consumerism
that actually I think is less than biblical Christianity, really. So those are some of the challenges, but at the same time, my sense is that a lot of people out there in society are very open to have conversations about Jesus. Mm-hmm. They're very open to be challenged about faith. Mm-hmm. They're actually hungry to explore some of those issues. And I think that the church, if we would position ourselves to preach biblically, if we would position ourselves to do evangelism intentionally, if we would position ourselves to be humble and to humble ourselves
as church, what does that look like?
I think it's around sometimes the language that we use. You will get invited nowadays to leadership days or ministry days, where I think one of the dangers is that there's not a lot of focus sometimes on us actually bending the knee to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. The language can be, an invitation for those who want to be influencers, or those who want to be change agents, or and we all want, of course, to be those things. But I think the challenge is, do we want to be those things in a way that really is about Jesus Christ being at the forefront of how we are doing life? Because my reading of the scriptures is that as Christ increases, we decrease. And I think there's something in that I'm not articulating very well, that I think is crucial to how we should be doing ministry.
In a way, a proud church that's full of its own achievement isn't leaving a lot of room for the exaltation of Christ.
You said that, Alan, but I think you're right. I think a church that doesn't preach Christ and keep Christ central.
Yeah.
A church that doesn't... sorry about that.
It's all right. The hazards of live podcasting.
A church that doesn't very intentionally live under the authority of God's word. A church that doesn't expect the supernatural on a daily basis when we're doing life and doing ministry. Is a lesser church than the church that Jesus Christ came to build.
What kind of leadership does that call for?
I think it calls for courageous leadership. I think it calls that at times we will be misunderstood. I think it calls for us to be those who are committed to the long term as well. I think we can sometimes expect to see results in the shorter term, but actually I think God is calling us to finish well,
mm-hmm.
to live well and to finish well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about servant leadership. By that I mean that we're willing to see others fly.
Mm-hmm.
For me, one of the greatest joys of ministry has been to see younger men and women find Christ, come to faith, become leaders in his church, and do things far better
mm-hmm.
than I ever could
mm-hmm.
or would or will.
And are you encouraged that you see lots of those?
I see some of that. I always want to see more of
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But I see enough of it to keep me wanting to see more.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, we need to see so much more by way of a humble, servant, but courageous new generation of godly men and women being raised up
mm-hmm.
to lead his church into mission and to lead his church into doing the works of the kingdom, to lead his church into preaching faithfully the scriptures, and to lead his church into making disciples, with all that that means to be a disciple of Jesus.
Yeah. We're almost at the end of this interview, David, and I'm going to ask you a question. It's maybe, in some ways, maybe the hardest one to, it'll be the hardest one just to get into a few minutes. As you review where you've been on your leadership journey to this point, what would you say has been the most significant leadership lesson that you have learned, and how have you learned it?
Probably the most significant lesson is summed up maybe in a phrase. I think it was R.T. Kendall who has recently written a book, It Ain't Over Till It's Over. And that commitment to keep on keeping on, and the things that we haven't seen yet that we long to see, to keep on believing and trusting and praying and seeking the face of God for the more of his kingdom that we long to see, for the lives that we still want to see changed, for the communities where we want to see new churches planted and God's church thrive, for the churches that we long to see turned around to become really significant beacons for Christ. That sense that it ain't over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the challenges in leadership is that we emotionally and spiritually retire or step back into a maintenance mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could do that in your 30s, you could do that in your 40s, you could do that in your 50s, you could do that in your 60s, you could do that in your 80s, but I think the greatest challenge is not to do that, actually, and to finish still running
mm-hmm.
the race.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting little phrase that we're called to run the race. I don't know that's
great. That's a great way, I think, for us to close up the interview. It ain't over till it's over. And I mean, I think that just applies in so many ways. David, thank you. Thank you for what you've shared about yourself, about your life, and the insights that you've given us in leadership, your sense of confidence in God's purposes for the church, and as folks have listened, hopefully folks have been encouraged to pick up some of that. You know, maybe someone discouraged who's listening, but who takes courage from what they've heard you say, and maybe will resolve to say any and over till it's over. So, David, thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate your time. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Leadership Journey podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and you can tune in because we'll be back again next week with another interview with another leader. And over the next several weeks, all been well, we have several fascinating stories from some great leaders lined up. So thanks for listening. Have a good week. Talk to you next week.